Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring out and about, thought-provoking conversations on the street. We consider topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative and explore whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the Arts Hour, I feature in-depth interviews with local, national, and international guests from all areas of the arts. And for this, the Topic Hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all, both locally and globally. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways that we engage with the world. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website. It's aquestionofbalance.com. You can hear podcasts of all the past shows there, and you can connect with me on social media if you would like to. Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So do go to the show website. As I mentioned, It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour, and we've got a couple of new tabs on the homepage of the website, guests and topics. If you click on guests, it brings up a page with all the photos and names of all the previous guests of the show. We've had some really wonderful guests from all areas of the arts, and all you have to do is click on the photo or the name and it'll bring up the podcast page, which has information about the guest and the audio for you to listen to whenever it suits you. And similarly, if you click on the topics tab, it opens up a page with photos and all the topic questions of all the podcasts that you can hear as well. Well, right now on It's a Question of Balance, we're featuring Out and About, the thought-provoking conversations on the street. And in Out and About, we are considering topics that affect us locally, but also globally. And the idea is to get us thinking about the questions that affect us all, to try and stimulate some new thinking, or get us thinking about things that maybe we weren't thinking about, or clarify how we feel. And by hearing other people's opinions, which may be different or similar to our own, getting, you know, new ways of considering different subjects. Well, this week we're thinking about, should machines do everything for us? And the first people that I spoke to were Rowan and Marshall. So let's hear what they had to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Rowan
and Marshall.
Well, thanks so much for stopping for Out and About. And this week our topic is, should machines do everything for us? One of the prime reasons given for using machines is to do jobs that humans don't want to do and thus free up leisure time. I'm wondering, do you ever think about your life being made easier by machines or technology?
Well, yes, it's a fact of the matter that machines and technology do make my life easier, but...
In what ways would you say?
Well, medically, for instance. But also, I compose, and it's much easier to type music into a computer than it is to write it out, because ultimately somebody has to type it into a computer anyway, or do real typesetting, so it's much simpler to enter it into the computer to begin with. And the same is true with writing, right, as it is with musical notation.
Okay. Do you think anything is lost in the creative process by it being transferred digitally straight away rather than onto paper?
No, I would say it's quite the other way around. In fact, okay, there are people who believe that when you lose physical notation that you're writing up by hand, that somehow they're losing the creative process. But the fact of the matter is that if I can hear five parts in my head at once, it will take much longer to write them out by hand than to put them into the computer. So the fact of the matter is that I'm actually speeding up the process, because the end result is what matters.
That's creative.
No, I'm becoming more creative because I don't forget it. That's the problem. Is if you hear something and you want to write it down, the faster you can do it.
Yes. Yeah.
The better and the easier. It's taking away something that's between you and the page.
Right. Okay. That's interesting.
So you're saying that it helps because you can do it more quickly.
Because you can do it more quickly and also because you can copy and paste. And that's like literally copy and paste function, both in writing and in musical composition, is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because before you have to cross it out.
Right, yes.
Now you just move it.
Right.
And you have an idea, you write it down, you move it, and then you can work up to it. So I will know how something ends.
Yes.
And I'll know how it begins. And I'll know what I want to do in the middle. And I'll have those things, and then I'll connect them together.
Okay. So one of the things, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to respond to the question myself. So if we're thinking like a Ray Kurzweil Rise of the Spiritual Machines type thing, where automation is becoming part of taking jobs, or like you said, like driverless cars, or like I know at some fast food restaurants they've started to put automated machines. Like I was in Paris last year and I went into a McDonald's and I ordered from like a kiosk instead of a person.
Mm.
So I think that like the more we have machines, I think that machines or computers at some point, right now, right, we're in the middle of capitalism and there's like this tech boom and it's this big money industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, and we're seeing this creation of an elite class of people who are involved in that industry who are very, very wealthy, right? Like, just look at San Francisco. But I think that eventually, over time, when so many positions are lower positions, right? Like, menial jobs or whatever you want to call them. Even, like, administrative tasks, like office things that can be automated with computers. Once those jobs start to disappear or be automated, I think that we'll reach some kind of juncture, right? As a society where it's kind of this Marxist philosophy, right? Where we're in the middle of heat, in the throes and heat of capitalism now, and maybe eventually we'll move towards like a more socialist state. But I think that, and then maybe a communist state at some point, but I think that will be only aided by computers or machines, as machines take away those jobs, and so people have more free time or more...
You're seeing that as more egalitarian, because there'll be less menial jobs, more people will have a similar level of quality jobs?
Does everyone have to work if there's not enough jobs for everyone to do? We're not just going to let everyone die, right? Well, I don't think that will happen, right?
That's not how capitalism works, then. That's the problem, is how do you move from a capitalist society to a post-industry society?
Right. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that The Economist has observed that in Western countries, leisure has increased, but people associate time with money and they become stingier with time in order to maximize money. So even though people are earning more money to spend, they're not simultaneously earning more time to spend it in.
Well,
so I'm just wondering if there's diminishing returns.
That's the point.
We're just going to work in the more time that we have, then what are we speeding everything up for?
Because the truth is that if you are willing in this day and age, say in this country, to live as people did in the 1950s, so you're not going to have high quality healthcare because it doesn't exist yet. All the drugs we have don't exist, so you can't pay for that. You're not going to have health insurance because that was not as readily available 60 years ago. And you're not going to have more than one car, certainly if you have a car at all. And you're going to walk more, and you're going to eat less, and you're not going to have any of the many utility bills people now have for internet and television and cell phones. You don't have any of that. Yes, of course, if you were willing to live that way, you could work part-time. I do believe that.
Okay, if you look at like automated cars, like you mentioned initially, and then you look at Uber, right?
Yeah.
So Uber has hired a bunch of people who are either unemployed or underemployed, right, to serve in this position of driving, where they drive around in their car on their free time. Or some people I've met, I live in LA.
Right.
I'm from Santa Cruz, though. So you meet people when you get in an Uber, and you know, some of them drive all the time, and they've been drivers their entire life as livery drivers or whatever. And then you meet other people who are doing it as a part-time thing. And I know that Uber eventually wants to automate that all, right? So it's all going to become like an automated car network, driverless cars. That's like the dream that they have. I think that once that happens, right, there's going to be an entire class of people that have been depending on that income from Uber, right?
Yes.
Or taxi. I mean, because they have already created a better taxi service. The taxi services have refused to compete. And London and Paris, they've thrown fits over it because...
What happens to the consumers who will be using that technology once it's automated, right? Like, you have to sustain a class of people who can afford to use these services that have been automated.
Well, there is that problem.
So either the cost
increases,
is going to go
the
down.
The less jobs there are.
Right.
So how you brought that up earlier, how are we going to take care of everybody if there aren't actually enough jobs to do because everything is automated?
But if everything is automated, does anyone have to work?
But you're assuming...
But then we have to have a completely different societal structure.
Exactly.
You have to socialize industry. The other option is negative population growth. And the problem is that you can't... our system, which is financed through debt, requires there to be inflation and economic growth to finance the debt, because you buy yourself out of the debt by diminishing its value in terms of the total market capitalization of a currency. So the thing is, that depends upon there being population growth. You cannot ultimately grow an economy without growing the population.
Well, if we maintain an economic model where it has to grow, which, I mean, why we need that, I'm not quite sure.
I don't think that is why.
We need a model where it grows because we have a debt-financed economy. It's not just governments that finance themselves based upon debt, but everything. Farmers, industry, everybody, if you buy a house, everybody finances themselves in this economy through debt. And it has been a significant problem. I mean, in this country, it's a very fascinating history in the middle of the 19th century when...
But financing debt is based on the potential for that person to work off that debt, right? You give someone money because you know that they'll be able to pay it back later.
That's what we assume, but it's more complicated.
That's what the theory used to be.
But it's economically speaking, it's more complicated than that, because you assume that you're going to diminish the total value of the debt, right? So you assume that if there's economic growth, the total value and that you would pay in the past will be diminished against the actual value you pay in the future, because you're paying a set amount against the debt. Because the economy grows, the amount that you're paying is proportionally less.
Except there's interest on loans.
Well,
right?
That's what I'm saying. You pay the interest at a set rate.
If you had government,
but the rate doesn't change. Yeah. But the amount of money you're making because the economy grows does change. So the value of the loan that's remaining diminishes.
But generally, interest rates are an order of magnitude, 1 or 2%.
I don't want to dissipate too much into economics. I mean, we're on the topic because we're considering how could life work if machines and technology take over everything. But one of the things I'm interested in is why we want machines to do things for us.
Why do we want machines to do things for us? That is something that is very intriguing. It's not just should machines do everything for us, but why do we want them to? I'm wondering, as you're listening, what's coming into your mind about this. And if you have any comments, do email me at ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages. Film Festival by USA Today readers, the Cinequest Film Festival runs March 1st through 13th in San Jose. Here's Cinequest co-founder Kathleen Powell talking recently on It's a Question of Balance.
I was wondering why you chose Silicon Valley to base the festival in.
Oh my gosh, Silicon Valley is such a unique place. It's where creativity and innovation come together to empower, and that's our vision with Cinequest. This is where it all happens. We want every individual that walks through the to feel like the value that they got far exceeds what they ever put into it.
Presenting Maverick Spirit winners James Franco and Rita Moreno and 129 premiere films, Cinequest invites you to join artists, innovators and film lovers from all walks of life, March 1st through 13th. Festival passes and packages available now at cinequest.org. That's cinequest.org.
Do you like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
That it's right.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour where we interview special guests from all areas of the arts. Right now, we're featuring Out and About, thought-provoking conversations on the street. And our topic this week is, should machines do everything for us? And if you have any comments of your own, do email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. Always like to hear from you. And before the break, we were hearing from Rowan and Marshall. So I wanted to get back to that conversation.
One of the things I'm interested in is why we want machines to do things for us. For instance, you mentioned music. There's a new software coming out that is for game designers that is going to write music for them to use for their games. So I'm interested in why we want to create machines or technology to take jobs from people that they actually want to do, like composing music. Why would we take that away from somebody?
You say there's a software, right, that someone's written that enables game developers to develop a game and focus on, you know, whatever technical aspects are involved in that, and then this software will write music itself.
Yeah, instead of saying I want a composer to come and write the music,
right, you know, but so they're still going to have to pay whatever licensing fee to whoever wrote, whatever company or person, individual developed that software. But also, that's just one person benefiting from that, isn't it?
Industrial efficiency centralizes control of a commodity. So if a commodity is a creative good, you centralize the production of it, and then you ultimately employ less people, which is why it's cheaper to do it. Now,
why do you think we want to do things like that? Is it just pure capitalism? Are people just not thinking? Are they just thinking, oh, I can make money by making this easier for these people and saving them money, and then I'll make a lot of money?
I think the music one is an interesting example, because I mean, creating a program that can produce music is a philosophical goal for many people, because it involves fundamentally understanding what music is.
Right,
and you finance it by creating a program that you sell to people to do it. I think it, in many ways, it's brilliant.
The software is going to be cheaper because you're stuck with that software, right?
Right.
Whereas if you hire someone, you can direct them, or they can direct themselves with their creative vision.
That's
right?
The thing.
For the music. So if you buy this software from someone and say, okay, I'm writing my game, I'm programming it, whatever inputs are required for that software to make the music, you're stuck within the confines of that product that individual has created,
right? It's going to be more limited.
It's going to be it's going to be stratified,
but
right?
But maybe it would be good enough, and therefore all the composers are out.
What is good enough?
I mean, they're already screwed anyway, because they're just given a flat fee and no royalties for video games. And so now all those creative people
Maybe technology will give creative people
the perspective of life that govern some of this? Why are we here? If we're here to learn and grow, to fulfill ourselves and our potential, then maybe that gives us a different perspective on what should be automated and what shouldn't, and how technology should go forward.
The morality of automation. So if you could automate writing of entertainment, of novels, would it be immoral to do it because there's a therapeutic benefit to the people who do the writing?
Well, we're sort of like we're doing ourselves out of a job, isn't it? It's like, why are we here? Why are humans here if everything is going to be done for us just so we can sit and watch TV like in Wall-E? You know, did you see Wall-E?
Yes.
You know, I mean, are we all going to end up just sort of little blobs in chairs?
But then we're all going to be watching something that some computer wrote, some TV show that...
Exactly.
That will never happen.
Well, I don't know. A Russian computer programmer produced How to Computer Write a Novel. I mean, I'm not sure that it was entirely sensical. I'm not sure, but it's an interesting prospect. I mean, suppose you had an algorithm which could...
It's an information fallacy, right? You can't create more information than you input. So someone who writes a code that writes a story has... They've put some...
Right,
you know,
they
can't make a story that's more creative than
but
the program they've
written. That's the other fallacy, is that the notion that writers are creating something new is a fallacy. As a writer and a composer, I can tell you that,
right,
that it is dependent upon everything I've experienced
before.
Your
unique sequencing of words and your story.
But does it need to be new if it just is your creation? I mean, that's where the joy comes, and the people who enjoy what you do. Yes, and it's in a time and a certain place and all the rest of it. I mean, I think all of that has a power to it. But where is the end point, do you think? How much of your life do you want controlled and performed for you? Would you like to sit at home with food delivered to your mouth?
I'd probably want basic tasks that I feel take away. Well, there are even basic tasks like cleaning that are therapeutic for you.
I had a robotic vacuum cleaner. I had an iRobot Roomba.
But yeah,
it's brilliant.
Okay,
I mean,
cleaning.
But the stupid thing is, then you have to clean the Roomba. So it's a never-ending cycle. Ultimately, somebody has to do something because you buy a Roomba and it seems so great. And it does save you time, but you still have to clean the Roomba. So do you have a robot to clean the
Roomba, right? I would want things like cleaning, getting to work, having sex with my girlfriend. That's a drag. Don't want to do that. All that should be automated.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because
there are limits to what you want to automate.
There are people who are working on sex robots for people who just can't ever find a partner for whatever reasons. They're socially inept or whatever.
I was reading an article about that.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know, is that also taking away human experience and the potential
Definitely.
For human growth?
It's
because if you can't find someone that's...
I would say it's bad for them. I would say it's bad for them, but so what? They're selecting against themselves.
It's the same problem.
Right?
It's the same... You're taking away the human aspect of it, right? In the same way that if you use an algorithm to write a story, you lose the originality in the story. So the robot person that you're f***ing is never going to... It's never going to have the, the same... That's going to be some algorithm, right? That's programmed to respond to however the user is using it.
Well, you're losing the human experience
or
the spiritual experience. I mean, maybe that's part of it. Depends how much you really believe or sense that aspect of ourselves, which can't be defined,
you know? I honestly don't think... From the perspective of the individual, that any of those things are important. If you have a perfect algorithm that gives you whatever you want, of course you'll be happy. Now, if this algorithm is giving you a perfect...
But
who cares? If you enjoy it, that enjoyment is real. The enjoyment is real.
Part of enjoyment is putting in an effort, right, and then getting something in return. So part of the gratification comes from the fact that you've expended some energy to do something, and then because you've expended that energy to do something, you receive something positive in return, and that's where the joy is, right? I spend an hour cleaning my room, and then I'm done, and it's clean. That's the joy, is that it's clean. You would learn to appreciate the clean room less if it was automated, just like you'd learn to appreciate your robot less if it just opened its leg every time you came home.
But that's what some people want.
Do anything.
But my point is that we shouldn't devalue necessarily what other people's experiences are, even if they are ultimately philosophically less fulfilling, even for them. My point is that they will select against themselves. If people want to go have robotic mates, they won't have children, and that is fine.
That's probably a good thing, though.
Right? No. So if you have a subset of the population which is so emotionally incapable that it can't meet real mates, but it still has no, truly, I think
it's depressing,
but it's true, it's real, it is truly real. And the thing is, should these people necessarily be lonely? I don't think they are. So you create a robot which fulfills their need, they're happier, and they probably wouldn't have reproduced anyway, they just would have been suicidally depressed.
Either way, you lose out on life, right? They don't procreate or they're going to kill themselves.
But do you think, though, that they're losing out on the other choice, which is maybe that they might seek help and actually become a more whole, authentic person?
Technology does enable people to be, like, depressed and you can hold yourself up into a room and be on the
computer. Well, you can escape, can't you? Exactly. I mean, like with video games and TV and all of this, you can just escape from life. Now, one could argue maybe that is a good thing, but then why are you here? If you're just escaping from your life, what was the point of ever coming here?
Well, that you're descending into nihilism. I mean, you're going to find that there isn't any point, so...
I think for
me, I set goals and I achieve them, or I don't achieve them.
Yeah.
And I mean, say writing a piece of music could be a goal that I achieve. That is a purpose to exist because it is something that you do. If you think there's going to be meaning in the universe, you have to be prepared to be disappointed because you're going to die before you ever find it. Maybe someday somebody will create an advanced civilization. Well, it's just a matter of statistics, right? Are we likely to find what was here before the universe? Are we likely to find out if the universe is...
Well, it depends how you define meaning, doesn't it? You're defining it in a very specific way of knowledge and understanding of the unknown.
I enjoy not knowing things. I enjoy that. I'm totally okay with living.
He's a physicist. Yeah. He just made a discovery.
Yeah.
What did you discover?
I can't tell you because it's not published yet. But I think there's something to enjoy about not knowing everything. So I think that's part of the human experience.
I think sometimes people need to know everything to feel safe. I think if you can hold uncertainty, it's very freeing.
If I had that point of view, like every time I go into the lab or do simulations and things come out that I don't understand, I would probably be rocking myself back and forth right now in a dark room or something because there's so much I don't understand about the universe or the world. I mean, I don't even know why do certain bugs pollinate certain flowers and what do they see there and aesthetics, all these things that don't make sense, but they make sense to the natural. I don't know. It's complicated. Yeah. Life is complicated. So.
Yeah. One of the things that concerns me is how much choice we will have going forward in how much things are automated. I mean, like driverless cars, to me, I love driving. I've done racetrack driving and everything. I can't imagine why anyone wants a driverless car, but it seems to be like almost accepted this is going to be the future.
I ride a bike. I don't drive a car. I have a license. I live in LA, and I've been hit by a car, by a drunk driver at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. So one of the things that freaks me out about people driving their cars is people are totally distracted all the time when they're driving. I mean, even my own mother, bless her soul, she'll be texting me while she's driving or taking photos and texting me, and I'm like, please don't send me this thing. It horrifies me.
It's a paternalistic solution, though, isn't it, to say people aren't capable of doing this, so we're going to take it away from them. It's like
So in Los Angeles, I think in 2008, there was a big Metrolink train crash. The guy was distracted on his driving a train full of people, and he was distracted by his phone, and he ran into another train, and I think 30 people died or something.
There's more of an argument for trains.
Well, right, but why? The technology exists, so why should you let people just put you in danger for no reason?
A lot of jobs anyway. Once again, I mean,
like a driving.
It's just like the enjoyment and the agency of life. I mean, my solution, first thing I would do, is make people learn to drive better. Then we would have a huge increase in people's competency. Okay.
Look about it. Think about it this way. No one is going to tell you can't drive.
But that's the fear, isn't it? Of like we get to a point. I mean, look at the volumes of science fiction with all these dystopian societies where people lose their autonomy because everything's supposed to be better for them.
Look,
there's some things though. Like, so actually, I'm a geophysicist, so I work with like earthquakes and earth processes. So I don't know if Richard Allen from the Berkeley Seismology Laboratory last week announced this new app that they just came out with, which lets you to detect all these earthquakes, right?
Yeah.
And when there's an earthquake and the California Seismic Network goes off, it'll turn on your phone and it'll start recording ground motions from your phone or your accelerometer. But another part of that early, the main goal of that is to have an early warning system like they have in Japan or that they have in Mexico or that they have in Chile or any of these other countries in the world that are seismically active. So that's one of the things that would be automated, would be this automated data processing from the seismic network constantly going on to warn people, to give them, you know, 15 seconds to go under a table or walk outside or stop the operation or, you know, stop the train or do what, all these different things that would save lives. And so that's one thing that could be automated. It's not exactly the same because, as you know, as driving, because there's no one out there listening to the seismic network and saying, okay, it's coming now.
Yeah.
But we could make the technology, you know, like it already exists in other places to be, you know, to be given a warning before an earthquake comes.
Okay.
So,
I mean, I'm wondering whether part of this is
not exactly the same thing. But
trying to bear in mind that just because we can do things, we shouldn't necessarily do them. You know, I mean, with something like that, that
that's
seems
obviously a yes. Right?
Yes, yes. But then there seem to be other things. Yes, I'm not saying we shouldn't do that.
Because maybe we want that. Yeah, okay.
But maybe there's other things where we should be weighing it up on a moral, philosophical level. And people aren't. They're weighing it up, it seems, predominantly on a financial, money-making level. And does that...
No, it's not just that.
Worry you at all?
Why? I do not... I'm 25. Okay. I've never driven a car in my life.
Okay.
I do not have a driver's license. Why would I have no reason to drive...
His mother drove him down here. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I would have taken the bus.
So you partake of cars.
Well, yes, but the thing is, look, I take the bus. I take trains.
I do too. I don't own a car. I actually drove down here.
In his mother's car. Okay.
Right. So it's when I live in LA, I have my bike. I have my tap card. I have.
But you would love a driverless car that you can just get in and go.
But
where you
want. There's a reason, which is that if I'd driven here, it takes half an hour to get here from where I live. Okay.
Okay.
That is a wasted half hour for me behind the wheel. If I take the bus, it takes an hour to get here, which is an hour I use to write.
Okay. One of the
I'm just saying,
arguments for driverless cars that I've read about Google is that they said, make no mistake, they want you in that car doing nothing so that they can advertise to you more. You have an hour free. Pardon?
He likes Google.
Said I will buy all their shit. No, I don't particularly like them, but I mean, yeah, I don't want to drive, so I hate driving. It freaks me out. So
if we go back to my original question, should machines do everything? I'm guessing both of you would say no, but certainly
certain things, like maybe like driving for safety things and the California seismic network, you know, early earthquake warning system.
You don't want a life where you would just sit there as some sort of
surgeons.
God with everything.
Surgeons.
That's my job,
doctors,
is to investigate
medicine.
Things and look at things I don't understand. That's literally what I do for a living. So I could never have a job where I would, or a life, I would never be fulfilled if I had a life where I was passively accepting everything that was happening.
Okay.
It just wouldn't.
No. And what about you? You don't think that machines should do everything either, but you seem more
towards
quite a lot.
You know, if I want to sell music or I want to sell writing, I worry a little bit. I've composed for video games.
Mm-hmm.
I can listen to the things I compose and know how they make me feel, and then I can know what I'm trying to make somebody feel in a given scene.
Yes,
The thing about the algorithm is that it can know what kinds of things make people feel things, but it can't feel anything, so it can't test it.
No.
It can only analyze it, but it cannot truly be its own audience and test it. And
there's no metric, right? There's no metric for that, or for what's going to make someone enjoy.
And I just want to say, I do not doubt that computers could compose beautiful music. I think that is entirely possible.
But there is a metric for if you're going to hit that person that's riding their bike or crossing the street, or if that earthquake wave is going to come. So.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate both your thoughts. Thank you very much.
Yep, it was great.
Nice. Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Best film
Festival by USA Today readers. The Cinequest Film Festival runs March 1st through 13th in San Jose. Here's Cinequest co-founder Kathleen Powell talking recently on It's a Question of Balance.
I was wondering why you chose Silicon Valley to base the festival in.
Oh my gosh, you know, Silicon Valley is such a unique place. It's where creativity and innovation come together to empower, and that's our vision with Cinequest. This is where it all happens. We want every individual that walks through the door to feel like the value that they got far exceeds what they ever put into it.
Presenting Maverick Spirit winners James Franco and Rita Moreno and 129 premiere films, Cinequest invites you to join artists, innovators and film lovers from all walks of life, March 1st through 13th. Festival passes and packages available now at cinequest.org. That's cinequest.org.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
KSCO is a proud sponsor of Fire in the Heart, Cabrillo Theater Arts Evening of World Theater, March 5th at 7:30 p.m. at the Crocker Theater. Award-winning national and local artists explore how the arts become a catalyst for resilience in times of trouble using gospel, hip-hop, classical music, spoken word, film, and dance. Tickets at www.cabrillovapa.com. That's www.cabrillovapa.com or call 479-6154.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And I just wanted to encourage you again to check out our website. It's aquestionofbalance.com. We have podcasts there of all previous shows. We've had some really interesting topics and wonderful arts guests. So I do encourage you to go and have a look there, and you can listen to the podcast when it suits you. It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and an arts hour. And right now we're featuring Out and About, thought-provoking conversations on the street. So let's hear the next conversation that I had with Kerry and Patrick.
Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Kerry.
Patrick.
Well, thanks, Kerry and Patrick, for taking part in Out and About. And this week, we're considering, should machines do everything for us? One of the main reasons for using machines is to do jobs that humans don't want to do and thus free up leisure time. I'm wondering, do you ever think about your life being made easier by machines or technology?
All the time.
Yeah, definitely.
The problem with that in industry especially is, what do you do with the workers that are displaced by the machines? Automation is great. I mean, I think that's what's going to move mankind forward into the era, like, say, Star Trek, you know, the utopian society, of course. But to do that, we're going to have to figure out what we do with people that do those menial tasks that nobody else wants to do, how we get them into, and, you know, how's the economy going to change?
Right, absolutely. I mean, well, with the advent of manufacturing, as you've said, David Ingram of on cron.com, he's saying manufacturing technology replaces more jobs than it creates, altering the balance in the labor force between skilled and unskilled workers. A job that requires 10 manual laborers, for instance, can be replaced with a machine that requires only one operator or repair technician. And this can have the effect of widening the income and employment gap between educated and unskilled workers, increasing the competition for fewer unskilled jobs and increasing unemployment in the economy. So
That's exactly what I was...
Yeah, so, I mean, what do you think is the solution to that, though? I mean, do you think... I mean, obviously, the whole... Since the advent of the Industrial Revolution, this has been something people have considered, but it does seem to be going more and more that, you know, so much more can be done for us. What do all those people do who aren't doing that?
It'll be a big change. I mean, it's a cultural change, too. We have to stop glorifying people, maybe start glorifying scientists and
technology
educators, you know, and get people into college. I think, for instance, Senator Bernie Sanders wants to give everybody free college. I think that's an excellent idea. That's a way to get, you know, people into the technology jobs and the skills they need to cope with the automated world, because somebody has to fix the machines. So there, it's going to be a shift. I mean, you're not going to see easily trained people working blue-collar jobs. You know, there's going to have to be some education involved. And as a society, I think we're going to have to give people a leg up to do that. And it's going to be expensive, and it's going to be a change. And
do you think there'll be enough higher-level jobs for everybody to do, though? Because if for every 10 people, you know, as I just quoted, one person, you know, when you replace them with technology, there's going to have to be a lot more higher-level jobs to employ everyone.
I'm sorry, that's where as a society we're going to have to put more of a value on research, scientific discovery, type of careers. You know, people, instead of cleaning toilets, now they can maybe research, you know, warp drive, for instance, or something. I know that's really far-fetched.
Or maybe work less. Do you think we could all work less, to share work out more?
Nice, yes. That would be great. I think that would be great. You go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that once upon a time, maybe 30, 40 years ago, kids would go to school and you had all kinds of vocational training. And we don't have that anymore. And I think that if you're going to move into a society where everything's going to be machine, we're going to all have to be trained differently. There's, like Pat was saying, you're going to have to be able to have that knowledge and to have those kind of jobs. And maybe that's something we need to think about. We need to have more training, more vocational.
Yeah.
And if you're leaning towards a society where there's more machines and we're relying more on technology, there's a need for more vocational type schools, classes.
What about the Internet of Things? You know, we're moving to having sort of refrigerators that'll tell us when we're running out of milk, and, you know, thermostats that control our environment for us. You know, when we're cold or hot, we don't have to make those decisions anymore. Does that appeal to you, that kind of life management?
Ultimately, yes, as long as it's flexible.
What appeals to you about that? You know, kind of...
It frees up my time. I don't have to think about those menial tasks anymore, and I could do things I enjoy, like, you know, a hobby, learn something.
You're relying on technology, and technology does break down. So, I don't know. I think you have to find a balance, because then I think one of the things that happens with that is then we become lazy. We're already lazy as a society, so we become more lazy and we rely on it. What happens if there's a glitch?
Yeah.
We're going to drink, you know.
But also long term, do we use the capacity to sort of rationalize and make those kind of decisions over longer periods of time? I mean, have you seen the film WALL-E?
I haven't seen it.
Basically, everyone's off on a spaceship because the Earth became so full of rubbish they couldn't live there anymore. But you have all these people, sort of obese, little chubby people, floating around in little chairs watching TV the whole time, and they've actually lost all the bones in their body. I mean, it's not realistic, but you kind of wonder what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously speaking a little bit to this.
Yeah.
It's like, would we use that free time to do amazingly productive, creative things, or would we just become more and more couch potatoes?
I think it depends on the individual.
Right.
So I think people that are creative and motivated to be creative, that need that outlet, I think they're going to be more creative. And I think the people that are more motivated to be a couch potato are going to be motivated even more.
But they can really do that today. I mean, our technology has reached that point that we can be couch potatoes. I mean, I'm in IT, so I can really choose that lifestyle. I've had to watch my weight, you know. You have to choose to go out and get in the sunshine. I mean, it would be really easy for me to get locked into a fluorescent world, you know, and cable TV.
It is easy. That's why you see That's why Americans are so big and everybody's gained weight. And you do get locked in behind your computer in that world. And
I mean, one of the appeals, I think, of technology is perhaps this aspect of almost being everyone being a little mini god, you know, kind of you're totally controlling your environment, or it's being brought to you. I mean, the idea of having your own robot, you know, that you just loves you and does everything that you want it to do, you know, like a C-3PO or something like that.
The idea is nice, but then me, I'm the type of person that says, well, it's going to break down, or there's going to always be a glitch, or there's, so where Pat's somebody that, because you're in IT, you're like, I don't know,
I embrace technology, so it's easy for me. That doesn't scare me at all. I mean, if it breaks, I fix it. As our technology builds, though, it's going to be more self-healing, too. That's the other thing. And then who does fix it? Yeah. When the robots can repair themselves, when you have robots that can repair robots.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen the Will Smith movie, iRobot.
Yes, nothing
like the Asimov book, but it brings up some good points. When the robots can start building themselves, you know, do they really need us around?
Yes, well, there's a lot of science fiction contemplating that. But one of the things I'm also interested in is, I think we could all sort of understand why we are creating technology to replace things that we perhaps don't want to do or make our life easier. But there's some technology that's being created. For instance, there's a new software that's being developed for game designers so that it will write the music for them, so they no longer have to employ composers. I'm wondering why we want to replace jobs that actually people enjoy doing.
I think that's soulless. Music is art, and I don't think we're at that point technologically. I mean, ultimately, you're dealing with artificial intelligence at that point, and I think that's soulless to me. I can go generate computer music all day long, use samples, loops, but it takes something away. There's something about picking up a natural instrument and playing it that I don't think we'll ever lose as a society. I that makes me sad in a way, and I love technology, but I've seen it intrude into music. I'm also an amateur musician, and I've seen it really turn music into something that's kind of soulless. As I said before, it's a little bit mechanical.
Yeah.
And I don't think a machine can ever capture what a real composer can do, what an artist can do. So.
I agree with you, but I'm wondering whether in some of these instances it can be good enough for certain people to make that choice for money, which is why people are developing those kind of things.
And I think that we live in a society where the bottom line is always how to do it cheaper, the cheapest way to do it. So if you've got a big gaming company, they'd rather pay less money, you know, not pay any money to have this little robot make the music for them instead of paying somebody to do that. And to me, it's a double, being a hypocrite, because it's like, if you're a game designer, you're an artist of some sort, but then you're going to sell out and, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Music is art. You know, you can even say computer graphics, that's an art, right?
Yeah.
So it's all art, but you're going to sell out and you're going to,
graphics, there's a human element too,
right,
as it stands right now. If a computer's generating the artwork for you, though, then that removes that. But now, if the time we save with automation, if we start valuing things like art and music again, I mean, musicians really are struggling now because they can't get paid anymore used to. I mean, unless you're really huge, like even those guys aren't making the kind of money they used to make.
Yeah.
We don't value art and music in a society anymore enough to pay people.
Not monetarily. I mean, it's more important, I think, to people than ever. You know, people are on their iTunes all the time, and they're listening to podcasts, all these things, but they don't value it financially for some reason.
That's the cultural shift I'm talking about that we need to make. If we automated all the simple tasks and then spent our time making the world a more beautiful place and lifting mankind up, elevating mankind, evolving to the next level, then I think it's a great thing. But if we let it turn us into these little mindless automatons that are sitting in front of couches saying, feed me,
around in space,
you know, seeking input all the time. You know, we need to have output too as people. I mean, you can't just be a sponge sitting there, because eventually you're going to fill up and rot.
So what is the end point for you? How much of your life would you like performed for you or controlled for you?
For me personally, I don't embrace technology the way that Pat does. I have more fear. I don't understand it as much, and my brain shuts off when it gets too technical. So I'd like to find a balance. Like, I think, I see the good, I see the bad. Like, for instance, McDonald's, they've gotten a lot of flack for the way they treat their employees, and and they don't pay and all this stuff. So social media, it's become this big thing. So what do? They're finding technology. They're replacing some of their employees. Yeah. And
that's their response to raising a minimum wage, and giving people a little bit. We'll just
that's
going to
happen
then.
More. Yes, exactly.
And I think there needs to be a balance. I think that if you can find a machine that can make some of the back-breaking work for you, I think ultimately that's better. But I don't know. It's all about finding a balance.
Yeah.
And who's going to find that balance? I don't know. I don't have the answers for that.
Because the human interaction.
You back to Zen Buddhism, really, hard.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that's where it
makes
sense.
Well, in Buddhism, you can find enlightenment through anything. So, I mean, they say even washing floors, if you approach it in the right way, can lead to enlightenment. So I think perhaps that's where we're missing the plot slightly in all of this, is that there's meaning in certain things that we do that perhaps we don't see because it's hard or whatever. But that's why I'm really asking this question, is are we going to lose some of the experience of being human if we go too far with everything being done for us?
I definitely think that's a danger. That is definitely a danger.
Well, you were just saying something, and it's interesting because I'm a preschool teacher. I work with kids, and I work at a synagogue. And every Friday we celebrate Shabbat with the rabbi, and the rabbi comes, and one of the things that you do a blessing over the wine, right? So one of the things that the rabbi will always explain to the kids is that when you're doing the blessing, you're thanking the farmers that grew the grapes, and you're thanking the people that picked the grapes, the hands that touched those grapes. And there's so what you're teaching the children at a young age is every step of this wine, every process, the human interaction, and that you have respect for those people that did that work. So in some ways, if you're replacing all of that, that human contact with machines, where's the respect?
Yes.
Things get taken for granted.
Yeah.
So
I also wonder whether there is some unknowable spiritual energetic quality to these interactions also, that what you're saying about this wine that's created with a consciousness of all these people taking their part in creating it, whether that wine would be different than a wine that was just completely automated and created by machines.
I would think once again it wouldn't have the same soul. The je ne sais quoi, the things the things you can't define, that's the things that make us human, that's the thing that elevate us above machines. You can't put it into words, really. Sometimes it's just gut feeling.
Yeah.
It's, I think if we pull it off right, it could be one. It could be a horrible thing. We could be these little mindless pale automatons, overweight, seeking input all the time. Or it could free us up to have the next renaissance.
Right, yeah.
And we could actually spend our leisure time doing art. Michelangelo didn't have a day job.
Right, yeah. And a more egalitarian society, perhaps, where everybody...
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your opinion.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good talks.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Thanks very much to everyone who took part in the On the Street conversations this week. And the purpose of the topic hour is to try and ask questions that make us think. So I hope that might be your experience listening to our topic this week. And if you have any comments, remember you can email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. And I am always very grateful to the people who take part, because it's somewhat daunting, I think, to be stopped on the street and just asked a deep question and come up with your thoughts on it. So always grateful to the people who do take part. And just to remind you, It's a Question of Balance has this, a topic hour and a guest hour. So be sure to tune in to hear inspiring in-depth interviews with guests from the arts, as well as thought-provoking topic discussions on the street. And remember to check out the website for podcasts that you can listen to anytime, anywhere, as well as tuning in regularly to the live show. Thanks for listening, and join me again for the next Arts Hour.